And then I forget whether this was the next time I visited, whether that was during whether martial law had happened then or later. But there was another visit. I distinctly, because I, again, it was a visit I went on my own. It might have been the same one, but martial law had been imposed earlier. But there was nothing. I mean, my first port of call was obviously Warszawa, because that was kind of like the destination for the going to Poland. You stopped in Warszawa. Fortunately, my cousin was living there, and her family. So I always started with them, and I got to Warszawa, and it was a bit like lockdown now, It was very sort of ponuro, you know, the atmosphere was very suppressed. And it was only when I started sort of, I didn't quite know what was going on or what, I mean, didn't quite appreciate the impact that of what was going on politically. And so I went to, I mean, I knew from the news reports, you know, we had a television by then, so I knew from the news reports, but to actually know what the impact was. And I remember becoming aware that, you know, of the queues everywhere, lots of queues outside, not everywhere, but just certain shops, there were queues. The bread shop, the bakery shop, you know, and then any like a supermarket shop, but all the shelves were empty, but there was a huge queue outside it because they were expecting a delivery of sugar or flour or something, you know. And so then I realized how the scarcity, how scarce everything was and how little people had. But then there was this whole sort of underground bartering system. You know, everybody had family somewhere in the country. Most people in Warszawa had a działka, had a what's the English word for a działka?
Allotment.
Allotment, that's right. Everyone had an allotment or had someone in the family with an allotment. So there would be this trade, these goods, you know, this fruit vegetables, etc. They made do with the connections they had through friends and family. And because everyone in Warszawa was living in these huge blocks, they all knew neighbors, you know, it was they were all very well networked, very well connected. And so everybody was acquiring all the pregnant women would go out to stand in the queue because they would have priority. All the women that weren't working were also sent out. All the grandparents, if those that were alive, were sent to stand in the queues.
Would you send anything from UK to Poland? And did they ask you to send anything?
Well, there was always paczki to be sent to Poland. You know, we would send our clothes over. My communion wedding dress, as I call it, was sent to my cousin. This was before this happened. Medicine was being sent to Poland. So, and we would have a suitcase, not with clothes for us. We would have a suitcase of clothes for the family and tea or coffee. I think coffee was more the preferred drink. And, you know, anything that was light that wouldn't be, I mean, in a coach, I don't think there were, I'm not sure how restricted the weight was. I don't think it was as restricted as with flights, but so you could get away with heavier stuff. But, and some of the clothes weren't for the family to wear. They were for trading, you know, Levi jeans and things like that. Or plastic bags. I mean, the reklamówki, they were like, you know, especially if it had Harrods written on it or Selfridges. I mean, there were people selling plastic bags on the street. there was this huge interest in that. This was sort of Iron Curtain days still. I mean, huge interest in the music, the Beatles, the English language, the culture, the fashion. It was just an insatiable kind of hunger for these things that were in the West. A thinking of sort of how lucky we were, not really appreciating how hard, you know, forging a life in a foreign country was, but you know, if you were young enough, it was possible to do. And of course, you know, my contact was with, or my conversations were with my people similar age, but they were all, you know, huge curiosity about what was going on in England, in a way that was sort of like, I kind of felt I wasn't well read enough to discuss, you know, the intricacies of all of this, because it was, politics was not, you know, a subject at school, you know, and so it, you know, we wanted to sort of play, but the time when I went there, with all the restrictions was very, I mean, I would not stay more than one, maximum two nights in any one place, because I didn't know where all this food came from. You know, there was nothing out there, and yet every evening there would be a table laid with, you know, the most delicious kielbasa and soup and, you know, fresh bread, and I'm thinking, where did this come from? And I didn't want to be a burden to anybody, you know, and I would leave dollars for them, not that you could only buy anything, but you know, at some point, you know, it could be used in some way.
You were just talking about music, and I just remember that we mentioned that before, that apparently you record vinyl. I would like to know a little bit more about that, how that happened.
I was part of, this was all to do with my involvement in Hafzarstvo. And we sang lots of, there was a very, very active family. I mean, the Poles that came over, I so admire their creativity. They did not lose their creativity. But, you know, whenever in the club, whenever we went there, or even in St. Mary's Hall, it was decorated so beautifully, the Academia, the costumes, everything. So, I mean, basically, there are a lot of very musical, creative people in the community, and they expressed that and had a way of channeling that into the community. And Hafzarstvo was no different. And among the families that were kind of driving and leading the sort of the creation of Hafzarstvo in London was a family called Bogdanovich, who actually live in the road the same road, and they were and also Paluch, and Paluch, Mr. Paluch was a lawyer, I think, and a solicitor. And his wife was a very active in Hafzarstvo and was very artistic too. And they had, I think, seven daughters, all daughters. and they have this musical creative gene, all of them. And one after the other, they all became the Druzhinowe of the kamienna, of the drużyna, in the girls' scouting group, or division. I don't know the sort of English equivalent for that word, but anyway, as we got older and became Wędrowniczki, so we were not only inspired to be more, to create these baranki and these bazie and these eggs and everything that we were selling outside the church. But there were also courses, you know, leadership courses. We were training us up to become drużynowe ourselves. You know, we were zastępowe, we had our own little brigades in the obóz, the old girls were in charge of a zastęp, of a small patrol in their tent. So it was all about leadership. It was about being creative. So I got very involved. My father was very musical in his own way. He used to play a mouth organ. And so he would, on a Sunday, he would play all these tunes, these marching tunes. And also some of the church songs, hymns, and I took up. I used to play recorder, little wooden recorder, at primary school, and I got an ear for it. My father used to play by ear. He would hum the tune and then he'd play on his mouth organ. I would learn the notes, but once I knew the notes, I could work out a tune. And then when I was in secondary school, I wanted to play a clarinet, because it would have, this sort of finger skill would just easily try. School didn't have clarinets. I ended up with a violin. So I had to cart this whopping great big box that felt, it's such an awkward shape. It was horrible. And I started violin lessons, I think in primary school, end of my primary years, and then carried them over into secondary school. And I was getting on with it. I was even playing in a school orchestra. We did a concert. I remember going to what was then Garrett Green School. It's now called Burntwood School, but they had I remember rehearsals and playing my violin in this orchestra. But my passion wasn't that. And the day that I decided I would object and I would just ditch this pesky violin. I was walking up the escalators going to school, my secondary school, which was an all girls school. Not Catholic, C of E. And I was walking up, and in those days the escalator stairs were wooden. They had these wooden and they had these teeth that the escalator would disappear, because these teeth would catch any kind of rubbish so that it didn't get caught in the mechanism of the escalator. So at the top of the escalator, you see that in the current modern escalators, they're steel, but they have these little teeth, and the steps disappear, but pass through these teeth. Well, the wooden ones had long teeth, like the length of your finger, possibly a bit longer than that. But anyway, I was walking up the long escalator at Clapham South, and I had my gym kit, I had my school bag, I had this violin, I was completely covered in baggage. And I was rushing to I was running up the stairs, the last few, and I tripped. I didn't lift my leg high enough and I fell on the top of this escalator, and all I could see is these teeth coming towards me. And I thought, and I blamed the violin case, because it kind of swung round and I tripped over it. And that's it. No more. I am not playing that violin again. And I was getting quite good. Interestingly, I met a few years back now, I actually found my best friend from primary school on, what was it called? Friends Reunited or something. There was a website where you could try and trace your old school friends. And I found her and we met and we had this talk and I was saying, oh, that voice. She said, do you still play violin? I said, do I? And so she said, oh, and as it happened, she became a professional violinist. Mm. And she always thought that I was a better violin player than her, that I was more musical than her. And so when she went to a different secondary school and I lost touch with her, but she then went on to become a professional violinist and she played in an orchestra in somewhere in the West Indies, I think it was, or South America. But I ditched it. I just did not want to do that. And yet, so the other part of the musicality was my brother. A friend of mine at secondary school was had a guitar, and I started to, I asked if I could borrow it at lunchtime. And I started, and I asked her to show me the chords, how to play. You only need three chords to play a song. Most songs only take about three chords. So I learned three chords and I started to thought, oh, okay. And then because of my ear, I started to understand, because of the catalogue of Polish songs that I had, Harcerskie songs, I started to work out the chords for the Piosenki. Anyway, it's all that.
Brilliant story. Just I feel like we have not much time left, do we?
So okay, well, back to the record. So what happened was I loved singing. I loved singing at the Obozy, you know, the 3-week outdoor scouting experience that was Obóz. And I haven't even told you, it skimmed the surface of that. That's a whole 1-hour conversation in its own right. But Obóz was where we would sing our hearts out. We would sing marching to the local Catholic church. We would sing every evening around the campfire. Ognisko was a real tradition that we, you know, very special, all the songs there. Anyway, so this creative family, I don't know how, and the fact that we were getting older and that we needed challenging and we needed, you know, kept pushing us to do bigger projects and, you know, stuff that was sort of a little bit more challenging for us. So we were sent on a course. Me and my friend Ella were chosen from our drużyna to be on a course, and it was a course that would ultimately create the tracks of the record, the vinyl record called Harcerska Dola, the life of a scout. And it was, and on it, from what I remember, because I haven't played it and I haven't heard it for so long, I don't have a record player, but it's not just songs. It's like the experience of sitting around a campfire, and the initial song that you know the initial song, the pokazy that you would have, the little sketches that would each zastęp would perform around the campfire. The gawenda was always a talk by one of the elders, so it would either be the komendantka, the leader, or it would be somebody who was invited to come to visit the Obóz and would say something. And then Yeah, so and then it finishes with, I think it finishes with, yeah, a modlitva, which is sung, which is Igenots, which is the last post, the song of the last post. And Okshiki. Okshiki were always, again, very traditional method of, instead of clapping after a sketch, you would shout something. And this is a very scouting thing that I could sort of, you know, spend time telling you about, but there was very specific calls and shouts that you would do in unison, and it was sometimes it would involve actions, sometimes it would be a yell, sometimes it would be a sort of a little snippet of a sort of a story, lots and lots of different okshiki. So anyway, so that's how I got onto vinyl, because I was part of the group that had gone on the course that had the course which was organized by the Hatzerterki, actually. I think it was just a women's thing. It was just a female project. So it was just Hatzerterki. And this the cover of the vinyl, if I'm not mistaken, was actually just looking at it, was it, I'm pretty sure it, the cover was painted by one of the Paluchi. It was either the mother or the daughter, one of the daughters, pretty sure. Yeah, so that's the story of the vinyl.
I hope
platinum. I should release it now and it would go platinum.
I hope it would
go viral, actually. That's an idea, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe I should seek permission and see if I can't publish it or something.
Exactly. So we'll be finishing soon, but before we finish, I just have a last question to you. Is anything else you want to talk about that we haven't covered, but you really wanted to mention?
I have, I've pulled together lots of photos and things like that. I mean, I think that the whole world of Hatzerstvo would be, has so much resonance with my peers. I probably haven't done it justice in terms of all the things that we learned and all the experiences that we had and the fun. I think that would be another at least hour in itself. It's a very rich, it's a very rich vein of experience during my formative years, played a very big part in my becoming who I am and how I am.
How about the Polish organizations, how that evolved, you know, throughout, you know, the involvement evolved throughout your life? Because obviously that was very, you know, you were very much involved when you were young, but what happened, you know, what happened then? You know, the church, the Orlenta, and everything else.
Well, they're all still going. They're all still going strong. I went to university in Wales, so I left London, and so that whole life that had nurtured me and developed me, I appreciate, obviously I appreciated it, but it was time to stretch my wings and go and sort of try life out for myself and create my own culture and tradition or friends, or, you know, rather than it be kind of created and for me. So I would come back at during the holiday times. My involvement at that point was only to support my mother, who was still teaching Polish language and Polish literature at the Polish school. So I would help with some of the translation from Polish into English. So some of the traditions of the Święcone, and of course at Christmas, when everybody was home from university, we would go to the midnight mass. By that time, the church on the other side of Balham High Road, opposite the club, had been purchased, and so we would meet up there. Several of my friends were married there. They had met up through Harcerstwo and had partnered up and married. So I would go to their weddings. And then they would obviously have their own lives. They were pretty much, most of them went to university, or if not, they would get a trade. And so we would meet up in each other's houses rather than at Bursa or at club. We would meet in the pubs. We no longer needed that. I mean, we would initially meet perhaps at midnight mass, or we'd go to the ballet, you know, the Silvestre, and the obviously Harcerstwo organizes a ball as a fundraiser. So it's called Obozowe Tango. So we would maybe meet up there, before the children came along. Once the children came along, then you would see less and less and less of them. But people who are, who have the children continued the traditions and were involved in especially in the Harcerstwo. I don't know how many went on to get involved in the Polska Szkoła, but they were at Bursa. So there may have been a bit of obviously their children went there. So they continued sending their children to learn the language and to do. So there was a generation that continued those traditions to this day, because their children are now leading the Harcerstwo are now old enough, have gone to university, some have come back, some, it's fewer, but the tradition continues. My direct involvement pretty much ceased once I went to university. Like I say, that the only connection was either because of doing something with my parents, which would be from the sort of religious side of things and traditional side of things, or by connecting with my peers, which wouldn't necessarily have anything to do with a Polish activity per se. So those that stayed at and studied in London, they became sort of a group of Wędrowniczki. They continued the Harcerstwo side of things. There was a group of Wędrowniczki. They would do they would have their own adventures and and their own projects that I was not involved in because I wasn't in London at the time. And that kind of lasted for another 2-3 years until they graduated and then did their thing. So there is a sort of I think there are other people who have a more possibly older than me, slightly older generation of people who retained and continued those institutions, those Polish institutions, and involvement, social involvement. My involvement was more into sort of wider charitable activity and involvement with young people, not just the Polish community.
Okay, I think we need to wrap up here. So we probably could just talk for another hour, but I really enjoy
easily. Well, I can.
But yeah, thank you so much for talking to me today. And I really, really hope that we can meet up soon and listen to your vinyl.
I'd love to listen to that vinyl.
Recorder. So you bring the vinyl, I bring the recorder.
Yeah, that's a deal. Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I don't know how many people have still got that record.
Probably not many.
I don't know how many were made, but it would be something to hear that. I remember actually hearing, when I did hear it, I could actually pick out my voice in there. I could hear myself singing in that on that record.
Thank you so much.
Wow, what a journey, eh?
What a journey, yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.